Good evening, dear friends. I saw your faces on the screen for that moment. It brings great joy to my heart. Your presence is your being. We can feel it, each one of us can, all of us, as we come together in a sacred intention in Christ. It is palpable and it transmits something to all of us. So our Christ candle has been lit, affirming yet once again that always within us and around us and through us, that the light is always there. We gather to practice resurrection, not only for ourselves, but for all creation. And to be that light into the world. So in this season of Easter, today is the Thursday and the fourth week of Easter. And I wonder how we're all finding sources of resurrected life at this time. Tonight's opening reflection comes from Jean de Salzman, also known as Madame de Salzman. And we honor her life. She died on May 24th, 1990. She was a student of Gurdjieff and a student of the work, a very big being. So it was fitting on Sunday when Peter was speaking about the divine feminine, and as we approach Mother's Day, that we would also be listening to the words of Madame de Salzman, who is an embodiment of the perennial wisdom that is associated with the divine feminine. As an aside, I recalled as I was preparing for this that many, many years ago, there was a work play at the church, and Alicia Janung played the role of Madame de Salzman. And so I remembered that with great affection and delight, because that too was a work of art. Hello to you, Alicia. So this reflection comes from her book, The Reality of Being, The Fourth Way of Gurdjieff. The child wants to have. The adult wants to be. The wish to be is behind all of my manifestations. To learn to see is the first initiation into self-knowledge. We struggle not against something. We struggle for something. I believe I need to pay attention when in fact I need to see and to know my inintention. When I began to see, I began to love what I see. Where our attention is, God is. And so it is. Amen. Just a note before we begin, there's been questions as to whether the Journey School messages, the Thursday nights, and journey groups will continue throughout the summer or take a break as we did last year. All will continue throughout the summer without a break. The last message for this year will actually be on Thursday, December 10th. I wonder what life will be like on December 10th. So now we prepare to move into the time of Lectio Divina, and we prepare all aspects of our being to listen deeply and to move into this inmost being, not just for the period of Lectio Divina, but for the entire evening, to receive knowledge, to have our emotional center enlivened with valuation and attracted attention, and to have our bodies sense the truth and the goodness of what is being offered, to receive all in order to manifest the Word made flesh in our flesh, in our own being. So with feet on the floor, back upright and heart open, we breathe in this precious gift of life that is evolving in us. And for a moment we hold it, and then we breathe it out. A healing goodness into the world. I hand over the complexities of the day, knowing that they are gifts. I hand over the plans for tomorrow, knowing that they will be addressed. I hand over all the anxieties of my heart, knowing that they are known. I stand unencumbered before God and before one another. I am totally present now. So our Lexio passage is taken from today's message. It will be read 3 times. And then there will be an invitation to share what came to meet you at this time, for the impression and where it landed on you and in you. Every normal cosmos, whether a man, a planet, or a star, has its own eye, the center of its selfhood, by which it is conscious of itself. In ordinary man, this eye, the instrument of individuality, is yet to be formed. It can only grow in essence. And from Mark, my name is Legion, for we are many. Every normal cosmos, whether a man, a planet, or a star, has its own eye, the center of its selfhood, by which it is conscious of itself. In ordinary man, this eye, the instrument of individuality, is yet to be formed. It can grow only in essence. My name is Legion, for we are many. Every normal cosmos, whether a man, a planet, or a star, has its own eye, the center of its selfhood, by which it is conscious of itself. In ordinary man, this eye, the instrument of individuality, is yet to be formed. It can grow only in essence. My name is Legion, for we are many. You're now invited to share what you received from this passage. And in order to share, please use the raised hand function. Jeannie.
Unmute. Oh, now, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. I heard every cosmos has its own eye, and that really lifted me up to the idea that I have a kinship with the stars. And that just is a, it's just really resonating with me. I'm not sure where it's going to lead, but as we go about this multiplicity, be it bearing in mind that we have this kinship with the stars of this I, the real I.
Indeed, we do. Thank you, Jeannie. Thank you. And is it Pam? Pam Minor.
No, it's Greta.
Oh, it's Greta.
I heard. Yes. I guess it doesn't say that, but that's who I am. I heard that real I is the center of an individual being's selfhood, whether that's galaxies or humans, and that we can only grow in completing essence. However, our small eyes, that legion, compensates for the incompleteness of our essence because they're sleeping, because they're subconscious, and because this enactment, whether for security, esteem, or control, lacks coherence because all the small eyes have different intentions and actions. So that I guess the conclusion of listening to the wonderful passages and section from the Bible that you read is that only the ability that comes with the development of real I can create a center in us.
Thank you, Greta. Thank you. Karen.
Oh, thanks so much. I'm so glad you're there running the show. What I heard was in the planets and the stars are of their capital I, their real identity. Man has to grow into his own, into their own essence of that known real identity. And that's what we're here to do. Thanks.
Yes, indeed. Thank you, Karen. Jeanette.
I heard the side octave. I heard that each of the planets, the stars, have their own real I. And I realized that we are all under laws. And I've often stood on volcanic rock and projected down to feel the pulse of the earth. It's one of the wonderful things I love to do. And I could feel the creation of the earth and the laws that in within the laws that it is under. And they are under the laws of the stars, and the stars are up to the absolute, through the galaxy to the absolute. And it felt like it gave me a continuous sense of identity. Like Jeannie, I felt that way, this identity. I loved knowing that we all have real I all the way up. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jeanette. Gay.
I heard we are legion. It struck me, that passage or that sentence struck me that the eyes are the ones that are speaking. We are legion. So it's as if the lower is speaking to the higher, the observer. And when I see that, all these hundreds of eyes that have grown up with me are innocent. And they don't need to be annihilated like I used to think, which is a form of violence. They simply need to be recognized. So thank you.
Thank you, Kay. And J.W. Minor.
I'm sorry. I got it. Can you hear me now?
Pam, yes.
Well, yes, Pam. It's J.W.'s computer.
Yes. That's what I feel.
Real I. Real I. Yet to be formed, right? It's always waiting. That part of the reading was stuck for me. Allowing ourselves or our souls to really open up by remembering to do our work and moving toward sort of more of a possession of our soul. And this has a cumulative effect, and I'm seeing this when we give our real self the space through doing our work. I am experiencing an opening up, a love for the soul that's developing in me. I can feel it. I can't put a drawing on it. I can't write about it like some people can, but I'm feeling a real opening up to just peace and patience. I guess that's what I wanted to say. It's a movement toward that. It's developing. Thank you.
Thank you, Pam. Thank you. We do have time for one more if someone else would care to share, and certainly we would welcome it. Well, this evening, the teachings are going to move from the dryadic movement of self-observation, non-identification, and self-remembering into multiplicity, the topic of multiplicity. And it gives me great pleasure to introduce Rodney Edmondson, who is going to take us and lead us through this journey of discovery. So, Rodney, please.
Good evening, Marianne and Pamela and Journey Group. I'm going to start off with an invocation that I've been saying for a long time that was given us in the 10th Advanced School by Donald Jenung. In the name of the Conscious Circle of Humanity, Mr. Gurdjieff, Mr. Alspinsky, Dr. Maurice Nickel, Burl Pogson, J.G. Bennett, Boris Moraviev, Rodney Collin, Madame Jean de Salzman, David Hawkins, Sister Bernadette Roberts, Father Thomas Keating, and in the name of the Blessed Mother Mary, in the Lord Jesus Christ, we pray. May this work grow, dwell, and flourish inside of us now and forever. We wish to work. I am. I wish. I can work. So, what a delve into the homework from last week. And Pamela, if you could put that up on the screen. Thank you. So the homework was to actively practice strengthening the muscle of attention by self-remembering in any and all of the ways listed below. Practice resurrection. So the ways, different ways of self-remembering, and I'm glad that centering prayer is at the top because the ultimate self-remembering. Number two, direct our attention more and more towards what is at our center, our real I. Choose impressions that focus on what is true, good, honest, pure, and lovely. Practice three centered acts of self-remembering. Reach for thoughts, feelings, and bodily sensations of the mystery within. Remember that we can work and take everything in a new way. Practice all three movements of the triad. Move the point of attention toward the center of being. We can ask for help. We are beloved of God and have a core of basic goodness. So the last one is to keep practicing. Every seeming failure has the gift of resurrection for us. And I have a instance of self-remembering that I think really was probably one of the most memorable moments of my life. About a year and a half ago, I had visited an ophthalmologist because I had this little knot in the corner of my eye. And he told me that it was just a clogged tear duct and a simple outpatient procedure would take care of it. So went ahead and had that outpatient procedure. They kind of did a little Roto-Rooter in my tear duct. And then I followed up with him and I said, you know what? I could still feel that knot. It's still there. And he said, well, we need to talk about pathology. And I knew what that meant. At that point, my heart dropped into my stomach. He was going to tell me I had cancer. And he did. And that also I would probably lose my eye. And that I might die if it had spread. So after about 10 seconds of shock, a profound sense of self-remembering came over me. It was almost like an energy so intense in it that it enveloped me so much that no negativity could penetrate. It was as if all that the work that I had done up to that point had come to meet me with great comfort. And this prepared me for what was about to come. This brought about a change of being that basically stayed with me through the following surgery and the chemo, the radiation. I was basically filled with love and comfort, and I knew that I was comforted at that time. And really, that particular instance of self-remembering, I've come back to that many, many times as a form of self-remembering and as a form of giving myself a future memory of a past memory. So anyway, that's my sharing, and like to hear from y'all and see what your observations were in regards to this homework. Pam, please.
Rodney.
So
good to see you.
Pam. Hey.
Okay. Hi. So good to see you and hear you. My experience of self-remembering was one of those super experiences that I've had several times because of the Church of Conscious Harmony. I participated in a wonderful webinar with Cynthia Bourgeau and about 4,000 other people. And it was the feeling that I've had before of an incredible inrush of God's presence. When we shared centering prayer together, as she was speaking, just knowing that there were that many people in the world who cared and wanted to be present. I've felt it at CCH when I've come back and realized the gift that was there that I probably didn't realize when I was there physically. I've felt it in the upper room in centering prayer retreats. I've felt it at St. Benedict's in their chapel. It's the accumulator of incredible self-remembering that is always present for all of us and that we have the privilege of tapping into in these little moments of our lives. And I'm just so grateful. So grateful. And grateful for this opportunity with the Journey School to come home.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Pam. We love you very much. It's good to see your face. Thank you for sharing. Karen Betts, please.
So this week, I had the experience of being in heaven and being in hell. And when I was in heaven, it was everything was beautiful. Flowers were beautiful. Sky was beautiful. Life was good. And it was easy to be in an act of gratitude and self-remembering. And in the moments when I was in hell, what came back to me was that I was in prison that I built and that I had the key to let myself out of that prison. And that memory, that self-remembering that I had been given the key by the grace of God, that I could let myself out of prison anytime, every time, truly brought me into a deep sense of gratitude. And then this past Wednesday was a half day of centering prayer retreat. And like Pam was talking about, the event with Cynthia Bourgeau, we had people from South Africa and Connecticut and the state of Washington sitting together with us. And what a gift. The self-remembering moment for me was to remember the gift I have that's called CCH, the gift I've been given in the teachings and the community, and how important our work, capital W work, is, that it goes out to the whole world. And that people now, because of technology and because of, if you will, the gift of this pandemic, can now be much more a part of our community, and we can be much more a part of theirs. And what a beautiful thing to add to the self-remembering, that it's much bigger than just me. It's an incredible worldwide thing now. And thank you.
Thank you, Karen. Marcia Silver, please.
Hi. I also was at, I have had a week of just incredible self-remembering, and my practices have increased, and I think that may be the reason. I used to get up every day about 9 or 9:30, and last week I just decided to start getting up at 6:15 and start joining the rest of the people at CCH in the morning meditation. So I'm doing that. I did the three-day conference with that the prior two women have talked about, and had some of the exact same feelings. I also did the half-day centering prayer retreat. And as a result, I have been able to see more of my eyes. I have been able to find internal considering in myself. I've been able to see false personality. I have seen so many things. I feel like the work has just, because I increased my practices, the work just came and kind of grabbed me and has been shooting all kinds of self-knowledge into me. And it feels, it's so joyful even to find the work is working in me right now. And that's all. But it's been I feel joy now all the time. Thank you.
Oh, that's beautiful. You know, Mr. Nickel, or Dr. Nickel, always said that, you know, and Gurdjieff said it too, in times of very much difficulty in the world, there is much consciousness to be had by people who want it. And I can see that your valuation is very strong. Thank you. Leanne, please.
I was really brought to my knees by technology this past week, and every day I would get up and have to face one more technological difficulty. And anyone who knows me recognizes that I barely can type a word or a sentence on a computer. I can get to photos, I can send an email, I can put together a Word document of yoga poses and print it out. And that really is about the extent of my ability on a computer. And so I've had to do these things that are so out of my comfort zone. And I had a computer crash, and all of the information that I'd worked, toiled for so many days on, went with it. And so I switched to another computer. And the long and short of it was, I kept meeting myself, and I could see where my pride and vanity was. And I had Mother Mary with me, and I'm so grateful that you mentioned her in your long list. And she really came to meet me, and I recognized that in her, as Father Thomas says, her nothingness, I could find my nothingness, and I could see also that everything was pointing to God for her through all of her trials and tribulations. And when I would come up against my pride and my vanity, I would think of Mary and bring her up and call and pray to her like crazy. I haven't, you know, all the Hail Marys I've said, and really taking that prayer on with different meaning. So I know that there was some good and honest and pure intentions with some of the work that I was doing, but there was also a good deal of those eyes that showed up that I was not happy to see at all. And Mary really was there to meet me. And I'm so grateful for that experience, to be able to come up against myself over and over and over again and recognize that all I could do was turn it over again and again every day. Turn it over to God, turn it to Mary. And so that was one of my experiences with self-remembering this week. Thank you.
Leanne, I too love Mary, and you know, Bernadette basically places her right up there with almost really the Trinity. And I understand exactly what you're talking about when you talk about Mary being close to you. I appreciate that. Well, when I was young, I grew up in mostly a Hispanic neighborhood, and Mary was everywhere. And I always appreciated whenever I would go over a friend's house, and little Abuelita would be there, and she would have her Mary icon, and it just stuck with me ever since I was a little kid. So thank you. And it sounds to me like you were embodying Mary by just letting it go and letting it be. Thank you. J.C. Shakespeare, please.
Go ahead, J.C.
J.C.? You're muted.
No, he's not muted. Yeah, you don't have audio.
Oh.
Let's go to Jim.
Okay. Jim Motes, please.
So I'm new to the work, and I've had a long-term centering prayer practice. And in my journey group recently, I asked the question, can you really do this work without having a centering prayer practice? And we had a great discussion, and the group helped me with that. And then the email came out, and as I continued with my centering prayer practice, I noticed that there were distinct places in my body where I was experiencing being identified that seemed to be primarily in my head. The capacity for self-observation seemed to be dropping down into the center. And then there seemed to be in my body an automatic shift into the lower part of my body as self-remembering automatically happened. And I would not have been able to have understanding of that had I not began to be in the journey group and have an intellectual framework to tie the experience, the intellectual understanding of self-observation, non-identification, and self-remembering to the physical experiences that my centering prayer practice has been giving me all these years. And my heart just leaped with joy. There was a greater sense of confidence that came through that, and I'm so thankful.
You say you're new to the work, Jim, but it sounds like you've been in the work for a long time. That was great. Great observation. Thank you. Catherine Nichols.
I'm looking for a unmute. Oh, somebody unmuted me. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yep.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay. So I struggled with self-remembering this week, particularly around an event that had to do with my interference with a nesting pair of Carolina wrens on my back porch. And I have this picture of myself being a naturalist and being very welcoming of any kind of wildlife and wanting to be taking care of them. And we have some people coming to paint that porch in a couple of weeks maybe. They may have had time to hatch and fledge their babies, but I really thought that I needed to get in there and do something to move their nest out of the way. And I didn't even know if they had, you know, eggs or whatever in there. So the Shaggy Dog story about it with a lot of justification is that I thought I had good reasons to move this umbrella around. The bird flew out, the nest fell to the concrete floor, and then the birds were yelling at me and I had to do something. So I put it in a pot and they didn't come back to the pot some hours went by. Well, I was just distraught with grief over what I had done. And I wanted to self-remember because I wanted to not identify and get rid of those feelings of remorse and regret. And just there's this huge amount of emotional crying and sadness over it, which I even had to wonder where it came from. So I tried to do the welcoming prayer. I tried asking for help. It's like if there's a off the list, I probably was doing that. How many times can you fail as my practice of not self-remembering? But in the long run, and with the help of a work partner, sort of asking why I thought that would have been so impactful for me, and were there similar things? And what came up for me was just almost any time in my life where I made a mistake and had regrets, you know, things I didn't want to forgive myself for, you know, I had thoughts about the way I mow the yard and say thank you to the flowers that I'm mowing over, or you know, trimming a tree and taking off more branches than I really wanted to, and all of that. It just, I could see what was built into it. It wasn't just that decision making and then thinking I was doing the wrong thing, but there were more than one I that were in conflict. One said, you know, this is the right thing, and the other would say this is a mistake. But the mistake was obvious when I did harm. And so I could see too the I that that wanted to move the nest out of the way so we could get the porch painted had something to do with my selfishness. You know, that I really love animals and wildlife and vegetation unless it's inconvenient for me. And that, you know, so I could see how there wasn't a purity of purpose for what I was trying to do. And, you know, I had negative use of imagination. It's quite busy. The next day I decided there were no more birds in my yard, that they had all moved away because it was such a hazardous place to be. And then sometime later that day, probably the same little wrens came in there, have the most beautiful song. And they just sing and they sing. And I just looked out on the very porch and one of them's hopping out there now, like 4 days later since I did them harm. And I thought, you know, they're here singing for me again. I was grateful for that. And that to me was a self-remembering moment, which I often did in nature, but it came to me when I really needed it, that those birds could forgive me and so could God. And that was really kind of what finally came to me about that experience and the gratitude over having been given a moment that could look like it's mundane in one way, but it mm-hmm. gave me a lot mm-hmm. of reflection opportunities. Thanks. Yeah.
That's beautiful, Catherine. Yeah, I love it when we're perplexed and it has to kind of work its way. We have to process things, or we just let it happen. And then God teaches us something about ourselves. You know, just the fact that we all love God so much and have so much valuation in this work. Every little thing that's out there, every little thing that happens is for us. And nothing is mundane, I don't think. Thank you so much for that. Looks like we have time for one more. Tracy Stevens, please.
Rodney.
Hey, Tracy.
Hello. Hey. So I had an event yesterday called Getting Feedback, Very Pointed Feedback from My Boss. And this event was precipitated by a few days prior, me feeling offended and frustrated. And I thought I was standing up for myself with my boss. And I got like this, you know, tornado of second force back. And I was really, you know, kind of baffled. And I had a sense this was coming based on some email exchanges that happened in between. And so when we met yesterday, I really got a lot of feedback. I got a lot of story. And at a couple points, I tried to say something. And then he immediately just talked over me. But the grace and the self-remembering came in the moment where I could just look at him and look him in the eyes and see him. We was on Zoom, but just to see him as another person, just struggling just like me. And to know that if I really understood him, I wouldn't disagree. And that was true. When he told the story from his point of view, absolutely couldn't disagree. When I know all that he's dealing with and all the facts and all the pieces of information he had that I didn't have, I can't disagree with him. So I was able to feel that. And I was also able to feel the truth of you can't change anyone ever with negative emotions. So that was a really good reminder that when I feel that anger and frustration and I'm not going to be a doormat anymore, I'm going to stand up for myself. Not eyes I want to go with. Unless I want to take on a lot of second force, that's going to be the result in this plane on life on Earth. That you take on the boss and you're going to get second force. So I'm grateful for this assignment, and I'm grateful for my work partner too, who really so gently nudged me to bring that self-remembering up to that very moment of when you're identified or when you're observing yourself, to stop and self-remember then, not wait till later. So I'm grateful. Thank you.
Thank you, Tracy. That's a great bit of feminine wisdom right there. Love you. So it's time to move on to our lesson. And Pamela, could you put up the key points of the email that we received today? So tonight we're going to be talking about multiplicity. And some of the key points of the email today: everyone has real eye. We are self-developing organisms. Utilizing self-observation, non-identification, and self-remembering to develop and widen our consciousness. It's true, we imagine that we are a unity, but we must understand that we have a false personality which is fragmented into many eyes. These eyes are mechanical and are a product of our genetically and culturally acquired programs for happiness. These eyes are constantly taking turns speaking as master. And as a result, we're never really the same person from moment to moment. We must get to know these eyes and realize that they are stealing our force. In identifying with them, we learn to not identify. In identifying with them, we learn to not identify with them. Each eye has an intellectual, emotional, and moving component. Seeing our lack helps us in separating the difference between the second and third state of consciousness. I know Marianne was talking earlier about Madame de Salzman, but this is the one of the things that she always talks about. Seeing our lack, knowing how much, like Karen Betts was saying earlier, we're in prison, as opposed to being in the third state of consciousness, in the state of self-remembering. The last point is the realization that we all have this condition and are helpless. And this realization is a form of self-remembering and increases our compassion for each other. So, I don't belong here. I'm not a good public speaker. I'll be publicly humiliated. I'll be criticized. It would be better if. You don't know me. What you ought to do. You know, something bad can happen at any moment. Oh, no, you didn't. There had to have been something I could have done, and she would still be alive today. You know, this cancer could come back. I don't think I could go through that again. People are wondering, what's up with his face? I'm getting fat and old. I'm a hero. I'm a zero. I don't wanna. I can work. Just one more cookie. Look, a squirrel. So these eyes are not my friends, and they are legion. Tonight, we'll explore the concept of multiplicity And the source material that I'll be drawing from is from volume 2 of the commentaries, page 594, entitled The Doctrine of Eyes. In another commentary, this is something a seminal place in the work that I can remember, where Dr. Nickel asks a question. Did you know that there are eyes that wish to drag you down? This really struck me really profoundly. Why those dirty SOBs? These eyes are continually doing violence to me and draining me of my force. A large number of these eyes are a result of events that happened during early childhood, in our innocence, as David Hawkins tells us. Wounds were inflicted upon us by sleeping people, unconscious of the lasting effect they would have on our lives. So in the words of David Byrne, how did I get here? So up until about the age of 40, I kept having this reoccurring image, just like a picture in the back of my mind that remained mostly subconscious. This was accompanied by wrong feeling of eye, something that Tim called a cramp that we carry around, what he used to use the word dis-ease, which influenced a good portion of my false personality. Many of my eyes are in reaction to this early event. But at the age of 4, my father, who was 21 at the time, got his boss's daughter pregnant. He abandoned his family to marry her, start a new family. My mom, who was only 19 and pregnant at the time, moved me and my brother back to San Antonio, Texas, to live with my alcoholic grandmother. As a result of all this turmoil, I began wetting the bed. And one morning, after such an incident, in a drunken rage, my grandma spanked me and berated me in front of a bunch of neighbors. This created an image in me that invaded my tissues and is really just kind of hung around in my subconscious for most of my adult life. As a reaction at that time, I was determined that I would never let that happen to me again, at least not without a fight. Also, as a result, I would try both to please adults and rebel against them. And in my teenage years, I was really good at both of those things. But when I was 4, my essence had been stifled and my personality had become fragmented. It was like I'd been kicked out of the garden. The world became an unsafe place. An unconscious error in perception arose and manifested as this disease. The message basically was, don't get comfortable because bad events are just around the corner. So in the mind of a little child, God could have made paradise for us, but chose not to do so. So began the lie of separation. Fortunately, however, the memory of the garden and a direct feeling of God's love persisted and eventually led me to this work. So now I want to start with the commentary. This is Dr. Nickel. Let us return to the fundamental teaching of the work and take as an example the doctrine of eyes. How many eyes have we got in us? Alspensky was once asked. He replied, we have thousands, hundreds of thousands of eyes in us, only because of the action of buffers. We do not see them as distinct, but retain our belief that we have only one eye that always acts and feels in the same way. This is imaginary eye. It is this imagination that one has one eye, this imaginary eye, that prevents us from changing. On another occasion, he was asked whether eyes weren't imaginary. And he answered in so many words that eyes were real beings in us. I love that. Eyes were real beings in us, real persons. But because we did not see them, we had the imagination of having real eye. The eyes are real, he said, but the imaginary eye is imaginary. Each eye is a small living person in oneself. So I'm going to go on reading. So like Tim used to say, just kind of lean in with me on this. Just as people are divided into number one, number two, number three, man, so these eyes in a person are similarly divided. Each eye has a thinking part, an emotional part, and a moving part. But its center of gravity may be more in the sphere of the thoughts or of the emotions or of the actions. Each eye is a distinct being that takes charge of us and speaks through our telephone, calling itself I. Some of the eyes are very harmful to us. Some are indifferent. Some are useful. A question was asked recently as to whether all our thoughts came from different eyes. The answer was yes. But not only that, all your moods, all your feelings, your actions, your words come from different eyes in yourself. As we are, we have no individuality, no real I, no big I that controls the other eyes, that arranges them in the right order. So once, while I was conversing with a work partner, I complained, "I'm getting fat." My work partner observed, "Do you realize that when you say the word fat, you put an emphatic stress and a strong intonation on the word, and that you make a certain face?" And I had to say to my work partner, "Thank you so much. No, I did not realize. I didn't even know what my face felt like." But I start to realize that so many times, especially with certain eyes, that I'll make a certain face. So I thank my work partner. As Tim used to say, you would want to know. I also have this eye that, when evoked, just makes a certain face and a little guttural sound that goes, usually that's in relationship to somebody asking me to do something that I don't want to do. So back to Dr. Nickel. At first, it is more easy to observe. At first, it is more easy to observe eyes that are acting on your thoughts, giving you certain kinds of thoughts. You observe that you are thinking in a certain way about someone. This is an eye that is thinking that you are taking as yourself. Or say that you are thinking about your life. This again, an eye, and you are taking it as yourself. When you do not see this trick that is constantly being played on you, you take all these thoughts as you. You think, "I am thinking this," or you say, "This is how I think." You do not see that something is thinking for you and that you are not thinking at all. You hear the thoughts of these eyes as if you were thinking them. In fact, you think that you think. Now, better eyes, this is, and I love this part, this is so instructive. Now, better eyes can see worse eyes, but worse eyes cannot see better eyes. What is higher can see what is lower, but what is lower cannot see what is higher. When you begin real observation of your thoughts, you can begin to see certain kinds of thoughts that you do not wish to accept, say about other people or about yourself. Now, if you think these thoughts are you, or if you say, "I think this," then you make one of the greatest mistakes you can make in the work. You give these thoughts power over you because you identify with them. So you simply go with them without realizing what the work is continually teaching, that you must practice inner separation. If you take everything that happens in the sphere of your thoughts as I, then you cannot practice inner separation. Why? Because you take everything going on in your thoughts as yourself. How then can you separate if you take everything as yourself, everything as I? How can I separate from I? There are eyes acting upon us and nourishing themselves at our expense. If we could always remember ourselves, these eyes could not have any power over us. And we are in bad states of thinking and feeling. If we make no effort to recall better states, we're dragged down. And yet, we need not be dragged down. What drags us down is our choice. When you realize beyond any doubt that you have different eyes in you, when you can hear them speaking or notice them working in your emotions and yet remain separate from them, you begin to understand the work on its practical side. So again, they are legion and they are not our friends, yet they're a buffet. They are a path to our salvation. Our place in the ray of creation is to digest coarser energy and definer energy. That's really what our jobs are. Taking these negative emotions and turning them into higher hydrogens. This all takes place at the point of incoming impressions. For me, the practice of inner stop has always been very useful, very practical. It involves multiple times during the day to take an abrupt stop in yourself in place and time and to see your level of being. Really, it's basically a full three-centered observation, usually preceded by a wrong feeling of I that is detected by the sense of inner taste at the point of incoming impressions. Then I can apply work ideas such as I have the right not to be negative, which I is speaking. I don't like to name eyes. I have one that usually starts in the morning. I don't wanna. There's another one that I call, it's not good enough. There's the professor that I'm kind of leaning on right now. And there's also one that says harmless unless provoked, but easily provoked. So at this particular time, I know I'm running on and on, but one of the things that's really fed me over and over again in this regards to self, multiplicity is Dr. Nichols' dream. And he talks about it twice. And I'm just going to read it real quick. It's short, but it's always been very useful for me, very instructive. It starts off, the difficult to cross ditch at the top of the slope is full of the bones of prehistoric animals. The remains of violent things, of beasts, of prey, of monsters, of snakes. They go far down into this abyss. There is a plank to cross by, but the air seems full of restraining power, like the invisible influence of some magnet. And this, with the fear of crossing this depth, although the width is not so great, holds me back. I cannot say for how long, for there is no ordinary time in all this. Then I find myself across on the other side. What wonderful vision do I now behold? I see someone teaching or drilling some recruits. That is all. At first sight, there seems nothing marvelous. He smiles. He indicates somehow that he does not necessarily expect to get any results from what he is doing. He does not seem to mind. He does not show any sign of impatience when they are rude to him. The lesson is nearly over, but this will not make any difference to him. It is as if he said, well, this has to be done. One cannot expect much. One must give them help, though they don't want it. It is in this invulnerability that strikes me. He is not hurt or angered by their sneers or lack of discipline. He has some curious power, but hardly uses it. I pass on marveling that he could do it. I could not take on such a thankless task. I come to a place, perhaps a shop, where boats are stored beyond the sea. So at this particular point, I'd like to see if there are any questions in regards to this lesson. Anybody out there who wants to comment? Greta, please.
Yes, I'd like to comment, especially in relation to something that Gay said before. The small eyes need to be recognized and not treated with violence. And I think, although in page 594, The Doctrine of Eyes, Nickel talks about those small eyes as not our friends, his dream is much more generous in his compassion. Mm-hmm. He works with those eyes. They might sneer at him, or they might not want to listen to him, but he does treat them compassionately, because we should have compassion for our eyes. They were created and instilled in us. We didn't make them up out of thin air. And they were done, people did that by social convention and other people's subjective morality. And with real eye, with a good general, we can have a much more objective perspective on that. And so that's my comment. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Greta. Yeah, he refers to this guy as a man without violence. Carly, please.
Thank you, Rodney, for I so enjoyed your teaching. You made it so real for me, and I feel really grateful for that. Greta shared something pretty similar what was I was going to ask about. I'm new to the work, and one of the ways I respond to different eyes in me is more, it's like I think of as real self as almost like a very integrated parent. And so kind of the way I relate to a lot of my different eyes is it's like coming alongside all those fragmented parts of me. And for me, the non-identification is then there's the witness observing those parts and recognizing like, oh, that part feels scared, or that part feels frustrated, or that part feels like it's not fair, or that part's feeling like I'm doing more of my fair share than someone else. You know, all those different feelings in the body and thoughts and emotions that can arise. And so the way I kind of approach this process is the more I'm standing in that true self, the more I can kind of steer the ship of all those eyes. Of it's not something that I'm trying to eliminate as more as it's something that I'm having a relationship to. And then it's through that relationship that then that's how I can integrate in my heart, okay, how do I want to respond coming from a more centered space rather than just reacting, you know, because that I'm hitting a part of me that feels angry. Or so it's like an integration of all these different energies, and it's a sitting with all the pull of opposites, all the, it's kind of this inner wrestling, inner integrating, inner parenting. I just, is that kind of what you're talking about when you're talking about how you, I guess I'm trying to make sense of how that makes sense with the work. Rather than thinking at those eyes are something I just need to, it's not something, I don't want those eyes in the driver's seat, if that makes sense. When those eyes are in the driver's seat, they cannot be my friend in terms of they can act out in really painful ways to myself and others. But at least the way I'm approaching it is not at those or something I have to, I'm not approaching it from a war kind of space, like not a war, like sometimes in modern languaging, it's like, it's not something of violence. It's more integration. I guess I'm just wondering about it, and I'm so new to the work. So it's really, I'm trying to make sense of this kind of approach.
You know, I like to look at it, like the parable, I think in Luke about, the great feast, where the guy invites his friends to come to a big wedding party that he's throwing for his son, and nobody wants to come. So he starts dragging in, you know, all of these dregs of society, the lepers, the thieves, the prostitutes, tax collectors, and he brings them in. And he has them sit at the table with him, and he eats with them, has conversation with them. Some of them are definitely not our friends, though. I guarantee you that. So it's hard to make friends with some of these folks, but it is something that we have to do. And I don't know why I always forget, but we need these. We need them because they're the ones that produce that negative energy in us that we can transform. And in order to transform, we have to be able to make higher hydrogens. And they're our friends. And probably kind of just, you know, like Gurdjieff talks about the devil, he's sitting back there. Yeah, he never gets out of character on stage. But off stage, he's saying, come on, man, you can do it. Yeah, I'm with you. So they're doing it for us. They're not doing it to us. Thank you, Carly. Judith, please.
Hi, is it me, Judith? Hi, Rodney.
Hi, Judith.
I love your teaching. Our eyes have danced over the years.
Oh my God.
And it's been a dance.
And I love you, Judith.
Love you too. When you were naming the eyes, I went, no wonder they're the same eyes. All the ones you listed off, I went, yep. So yeah. I so appreciated your teaching. I so appreciate the growth in being I see in you, from your ordeal with your physical challenges and just from your life and from your hanging in there and working for years and years. And my eyes are my friends. Your eyes are my friends.
Yeah.
They have to do what they have to do. It's all part of the divine plan. And self-remembering this week had a new flavor for me. It was to endure with reverence, and that self-remembering is actually being aware of our helplessness and our nothingness. Now, there are a lot of eyes that don't like to hear that, but something deep down knows it's the truth and that there can be rest there. Thank you.
Judith, thank you. And I remember all those second lines. They really got us to this point, didn't they? That was a good dance we had, Judith.
What?
Dance. Thank you. So it looks like we're running out of time. I know there's other folks that want to talk. But I just wanted to say that, remember, the revolution will not be televised, but it will require effort. And in the name of God, omnipresent, God transcendent, God immanent. May we know you more. May we love you more. May we serve you more. Now and forever. Now time for the homework. Thank you, Pamela. So the homework for this week is going to be, can you hear, feel, and sense the multiplicity of eyes within? In observing the multiplicity and its mechanical playing out in your daily life, can you now feel compassion towards others, knowing that they too are a multiplicity? In your interactions with others this week, practicing multiplicity, and in doing so, let them off the hook instead of taking offense or judging. Thank you all for your attention. Marianne, please.
Thank you, Rodney. That was a great blessing. A closing word from Rodney Collin. I is a sacred word. Usually we mean us, a whole row of eyes. We must learn to put them on shelves. One eye feels something. If we say to ourselves, that eye feels such and such, it is as if we put it on its own shelf. Another eye feels something and we put it on its shelf. When people keep talking about their eyes, they do not grow. When I said this, I showed that, I did the other, we will never grow. If a drop of water falls into the sea, is it the drop that gives its name to the sea, or the sea to the drop of water? Let us pray aloud together the prayer of God's love. That God's love has met and will always meet all my needs. I give freely and receive joyfully, and how blessed I am to simply remember God. Protect us, Lord, while we are awake, and watch over us as we sleep, that awake we may keep watch with Christ, and asleep rest in Christ's peace. Amen.